They say that the playoffs do not start until the road team wins a game, and that has not happened. The Mavericks winning game three, the Suns looking absolutely nothing like themselves. But what can we take from this game, and what does it mean? We'll get into it on today's episode of Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member and a contributor at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day, even though it's a hard one. It's our day to wake up. I'm sure that some of you are like, I barely got out of bed. I don't want to hear this guy yelling at me, but you're here anyway, so I appreciate it. Hit that subscribe button, that follow button on whatever platform you're finding us, whether that is podcast form, YouTube form, we're free everywhere. All you got to do is hit that subscribe button and you will be along for the ride with us. Aaron Edwards is here. He is a writer at All Caps NBA, a guest host here, a guest host there. He is a media personality, bona fide media personality now, but he is nice enough to be joining us here on this Friday night. Aaron, I want to ask you off the top here, what do you take from that game? And that's the basic question, but I think it's one that Suns fans are going to be wondering. A lot of weird stuff, but what do you feel like mattered from this game? What will matter going forward in the series?
I think just not having Jay Crowder be your leading scorer through the first three quarters. Like, I just think it's just going to be bad regardless of how the game's going. And if your Hall of Famer, top player, second best player, however you want to classify Chris Paul, has 7 points and seven turnovers, you're just not going to win. And that was probably just the story of the first half. And we just never really dug our way out of it. We were fighting through it, and I feel like in any other scenario, if we pulled it together, we probably at least cut it to, like, single digits. But they just played bad the entire time, and they were just fighting an uphill battle the entire time.
Yeah, 20 points in the first quarter. Obviously, only 94 total. I think I named game two, the recap episode of game two, or even maybe it was game one, whatever it was. I said, like, the real Phoenix Suns are back, basically. This did not feel like that, and that's been a pattern. I mean, obviously, the playoffs, you play great teams. I get that. The Pelicans were their own matchup. This Dallas team is a different one, but it's just puzzling and kind of, I don't know, a little worrisome, I guess, that the Suns are just having so many up-and-down performances that they haven't been able to string together. Like, I mean, think about last year. They had, what, a 9-game winning streak in the middle of the playoffs? Like, I know that doesn't happen for every team every year, but they haven't even been able to string together, I don't know, like, three games where you really feel like they brought their absolute best. So that's obviously not great, but you still obviously are up 2-1 in the series. The thing that I think on the Dallas side a little bit here that I guess is worrisome, or just that you kind of think might transfer over going forward, is you get Brunson stepping up. I mean, that's the big thing. 28 points from him, 10 of 21 from the field. But even more so than just like him playing better and making, I mean, he made his twos. He still didn't really, he wasn't that efficient overall. It's just that him and Luka both were getting to the basket, and that felt like the biggest change, because I was the guy, I thought they needed to affect Luka's rhythm, and obviously you still prioritize that even when he's getting his, because I think that there gets this be this narrative where it's like, okay, Luka's just going to do what he wants and you live with the rest. It's like, okay, but you have a game like this then where Luka has 9 assists and only 5 turnovers, and it's like, okay, well, him getting his also involved other guys, and that's when you start to have the problem. And both of those guys in that pick and roll, they were just driving all the way to the basket. They were getting what were like pull-up jumpers or floaters and whatnot in the last couple games. Those were layups this time, and those were free throws, and those were kickouts to three-point shooters. And it was a big problem. I mean, Dallas only scored 103. It felt like they scored 130.
Yeah, Brunson was taking Book off the dribble from the start. Like, you could just tell, like, he really took it to heart, and he was going to just be aggressive from the start of the game. And yeah, once he started getting to the rim whenever he wanted, and the, like, I don't think they got into the bonus that much, but you can just tell that Book was kind of trying to preserve himself for offense, even though he started off really slow after that first half or after that first quarter. So it just seemed like they were kind of just on their heels from the start with Dallas just punching them in the face in the first half.
Yeah, we're talking about stuff that might keep going. We'll talk about adjustments in the third segment. Do you feel like we see somebody else on Brunson? Are you going to overreact? I guess not over. Are you going to react and adjust based on this game if you're Monty Williams just with what Brunson did? Or do you think, hey, on the whole, we've still stopped him most of the series? Because after games one and two, you probably would have said, wow, Book's holding up pretty well. Then now yeah. It's one game he doesn't. Do you switch it up or do you just chalk it up to, hey, it was at home, things happen, it's one game?
Yeah, I think you chalk it up to that first. I think just because the offense in general was just terrible. Everybody was bad today. I think Mikal was a minus 11. Book was a minus 11. Chris Paul was like a minus 7. Like everybody in our starting lineup was terrible. So I just think like if we just get back to playing our game, especially on offense and not having the turnovers and just like the overall just miss bunnies. Ayton had a rough one, missing really close baskets. I just think none of the Brunson stuff even matters on defense if we play our game on offense.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I think the weird thing is the Suns, like you were just kind of hinting at, Suns only scored 94. You know, going into game three, obviously the Suns had scored 129 in the last game. I felt like the Dallas's biggest problems were on defense. I don't exactly think that they solved the problems on defense, Dallas. I think the Suns beat themselves in a lot of ways. You also had Mikal Bridges just shooting the ball really poorly. We'll get to the turnover stuff in a second, talk about the two superstar players. But on the topic of the defense and Booker a little bit there. So heading into this game, Booker had guarded Brunson for 31 possessions. Brunson was 2 of 7 from the field, and Booker hadn't fouled him. Now, I understand all the caveats, like we don't, this stuff gets programmed in by a computer, and I get that. It's not like foolproof, but it is like the best we can do. And it was showing us, and anybody watching these games was thinking the same thing. Like, he's holding up. So I probably agree with you, but I have seen a lot of people online saying, you know, like, you gotta mix it up. You can't let Booker keep getting beat. But I just come back to, like I said, it feels like Dallas scored 130 tonight. They scored 103, and so it took that game from Brunson. They beat the Suns by 9, and they barely cracked 100 points. So I'm not sure it's something to overreact to start game 3. Again, we'll get to the adjustment stuff to close the show, but it's at least something maybe you don't keep at it for the whole game. Like, yeah, you're already, you have a plan B next time.
Yeah, I think at some point all of us looked at the score and thought we would be down 25, like, there was like a point where just visually the way we looked just didn't look like good basketball. And then you see at halftime, we were down 7. Like, I really thought we should have been down 20 the entire game. So they played hard and they really took it to us, but I really think we just played terrible. And that's like just watching the basketball that was being played. It just looked like bad basketball.
Yeah, closing the second quarter, the Suns did a great job. I think it was LeBron who tweeted the other day, like, all the playoffs are about is who closes quarters better. And I'm like, that's exactly what somebody would say who could score 50 in a finals game at will. Like, yeah, you just got to close quarters. It's like, yeah, you also have to be, like, incredible at basketball. But it sometimes is true. Like, I get where he's coming from is if you can always make a push in those types of spots, you're going to set yourself up. The Suns did it in that second quarter. And then in the third quarter, they didn't. And Luka was out of the game. They didn't do a lot. And it ended up being like 15-16 heading into the fourth quarter. They cut it to single digits, and then the Mavs put it away. But last question. I definitely don't want to spend like a whole segment on this, but I'll just ask you briefly here before we hit Booker and Paul on the offensive end and talk about their game a little bit. How much do you care about the fouls? I mean, if anybody listened to you and I in round one, we didn't talk about it a lot, but the Mavs are frustrating in a lot of the same ways that New Orleans was. Like they're trying to play physical. They're gonna cry for calls just like the Suns are sometimes. It's getting to that point in the series. Do you think it made an impact today at all?
No, not this game. It was just I mean, they got a lot of calls, but we also got a couple. Like, I just think it's been bad for – this was, like, the one game it was bad for everybody. So I wasn't really, like, tripping. It was some of the out-of-bounds tip balls stuff that I didn't like as much. But calls-wise, foul calls-wise, nah. It's not as bad as the Pelicans. It seemed like every time they went to the rim, they were getting free throws.
Yeah, they definitely don't initiate that stuff quite as much. But, like, the technicals and the – kind of 50-50 stuff and whatever. I agree with you, though. I don't think it matters. It pisses fans off. I get it. I get Luka's frustrating. We all predicted going in that he was going to be the most hated guy on this Mavs team. It only took him 3 games to prove that. He was feeling very, very good about himself at the end of that first half, up 7. I thought that was a little silly. I think you should look at the series totals there, 2-1 still, but that's all right. We'll talk about Booker and Paul because I think that's if there's anything to be like most alarmed by just looking at the box score, it's 12 turnovers for those two. We'll get to that in a second. First, the guys, today's show brought to you by Built Bar. It's a protein bar, but it tastes like a candy bar. They have all new flavors all the time. They'll cycle the old ones back in. They'll cycle new ones through for a limited time. They'll run out of old ones, and you got to get some before they go out. All of it. You just have to keep up to date. That's Built.com, guys. Every single bar packed with 15 to 20 grams of protein, you're never really cracking 150, maybe 200 calories, but that's low for most protein bars and never more than 5 grams of sugar. But it's always going to be delicious and it's always going to get you that protein that you need, whether it's before a workout, after a workout, or just a snack, whatever you need it for. Built Bar is there and they're delicious every single time. So go to Built.com, guys. Use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. Aaron, you could have put yourself on the injury report as out with flu-like symptoms. I could have done the show. I feel like you have a sore throat. I appreciate you powering through, man. But let me just put it to you this way. Chris Paul had 6 turnovers in that. I believe he had 6 in the first quarter, I want to say. I don't remember exactly how it all panned out, but he ends with 7. What happened? Why was he turning the ball over? What do you explain it with? I don't think the Mavs were suddenly pressuring him in some new way. They've been pressing him almost full court all series and he's had no problem. Why was he so loose with the ball here in game 3?
I think it was just the one or two Chris Paul stickers that we always get. Like he's been doing it in the playoffs every year. He's going to give you a rough one.
You don't have something more optimistic than that? Come on.
No, I just think like we've seen him play basketball long enough to know that he's going to give you a stinker every once in a while. And this was his. There are some games where he looks like the greatest basketball player of all time and some where he just looks like a bench player sometimes. Like, I don't know how to explain the drastic change that he has sometimes in the playoffs, but every once in a while, we all have seen it in every single series or team he's played for. He just gives you a stinker every once in a while. I think he tries to play a little too slow sometimes and wait a little too long to get his own shot, and it just kind of backfires every once in a while. But usually 99.9% of the time it works for him.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say on Paul specifically and just in general, the pressure that Booker and Paul were seeing, and I do think it was a little bit more. I still think that the Suns have answers for it. I don't think the Mavs defenders, not so much even Finney-Smith and Bullock on the ball, but the other like back rotations that need to happen. I think that the Suns, if they're ready for it in game 4, they'll have answers. I think the one thing that is connected, and again, I'm not sure it continues, but it's at least worth noting, is Mikal Bridges just missing shots hurts because he's more so than even DeAndre Ayton. Mikal Bridges is the outlet when there's a blitz, when there's a double team, when Paul or Booker pick up their dribble or they don't have an opening, they can get it to him on a cut, on a you know, space into a closeout, on some of those flares where he comes into the middle of the paint and then he sprays it back out to shooters. Like, he's that guy for them, and when he's 5 of 14, 0 of 2 from 3, feels a little bit like games 3 through 6 of the finals where he just wasn't what he needed to be. So I don't think that continues. I think he's a much better player than he was last year, but I think that explains some of it. If you get, you know, a 50% shooting Mikal Bridges who makes like 2 or 3 threes, I don't think we feel quite as bad about the nights that Paul and Booker had. But what about Booker? Was there anything different with him? Because he doesn't always give those clunkers. He's not the marvel that Chris Paul is, the playoff whatever you want to put to Chris Paul. Booker doesn't always have these games. Why did he struggle?
I think he started off like really hot, and I think like somewhere in the middle or the end of the first quarter, like seeing how Chris was playing, I think he was trying to decide if it was a point guard day for him or if it was a shooting guard day for him. Like, he didn't know what type of game he was about to have, because I feel like everything kind of got jumbled up at the end of the first, and nobody really knew their role for a little bit. And so he was stuck in like that no man's land of point guard, shooter, and he was trying to get everybody else involved, but trying to get his shots up. And Chris Paul was just roaming out there. I don't know what was going on. Like, it just seemed like everybody was kind of out of sync.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer for it with Booker necessarily. I'm looking up his shot charts from this game and from game three. But I think that one thing that I will point out with Booker is he was 7 of 20 in game one. And I think that there's times where it's like it's nitpicking. And it's like one of those things you don't want to have to say it after a bad game. But like, because it did also happen in game one, he missed a bunch in that fourth quarter of game one. That was part of why the Mavs were able to get back in it. It feels like when he's comfortable or when he has confidence against the opponent, he can just sometimes get carried away taking jumpers. Like, I think at the end of the day, that's a lot of it. He was 2 of 7 from two. I don't feel like he got to the rim as much here as he did in game two, which I'm pulling up the shot chart of right now to make sure I'm not making that up. But that's it. I mean, yeah, look, he took only two. He was 2 of 4 from mid-range in game two, and he made 4 threes. He missed all of his layups, but he at least was... Oh, no, is this game three? It might be game three, actually. But either way, that's the one thing I would say. He gets those switches. He knows he can get to his spots against anybody, and he just kind of gets... He just gets a little bit restless. Like, he just takes some of those bad shots. Is there anything else? I think the other part of this backcourt stuff is Cameron Payne just needs to be better. I mean, he can't be 0-4
from in 14 minutes. Yeah, it's just he did 14 minutes 0-4, and he's just not giving us anything. Anytime that he gives us literally anything off the bench just to give Chris Paul more time on the bench, then we just play better. Like, I just think he has to get to the rim. Like, that's what he's in there for, to get to the rim and kind of just run the pick and roll. Like, he doesn't know what to do in between JaVale setting the pick now and should I get him the ball, should I get a shot up, and he just seems so inconsistent out there.
Yeah, the JaVale thing has been, I mean, that's been there all year. Like, Monty's even acknowledged it. I mean, he did more so early in the season, but at a certain point it's like, you know, let it go. Dario Saric isn't available anymore. But the difference between playing with that spacer and playing with JaVale, I think that's still just hurting Cam right now. But at the same time, we've seen him. He doesn't need to score 20. He can just score 8 to 10 efficiently, not turn the ball over, and create some shots for teammates. I think making threes is a big part for him. When he doesn't at least just make open threes, he just starts to really feel like, what are we doing with him? You know, like, what's going on out here? Because, I mean, the box score shows that he had more fouls than assists and he didn't make a shot. Like, and he's not, it doesn't feel like he can defend anybody most of the time. Like, I think that's a harsh thing to say, but in the playoffs with how much size is on most great NBA teams right now, it feels like that with Chris Paul sometimes. It definitely feels like that with Cam Payne. I pulled up Booker's shot chart because I was on game three. I didn't realize it was already up. I clicked the wrong one. He was 3 of 6 in the paint in game two, 3 of 5 from mid-range, and then he had the 5 of 8 from three. So obviously more efficient from all three levels, but those 5 paint shots and only 4 mid-range shots, like, I think that mix feels a little bit better when he's out attacking in transition. I agree with you. I think it was like a feeling it out process, and he just didn't keep the aggressiveness going all night and settled a little bit. But again, it's like, you can get on him in a bad game, and then he'll turn around in game four, he could have 40, and then you'll feel like an idiot. So I'm not going to, like, push it too much, but I do think that matters. All right, let's talk about adjustments for game three. What could we actually see change? A little bit more of kind of what will stay. I think we'll return to that. I want to talk about the shooting from some of the Mavs role players. I know we'll get into that. First, though, guys, today's show brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, podcasts, news, all of it, all year long, including the basketball playoffs, the baseball regular season, and of course the Kentucky Derby just around the corner as well. BetOnline, that continued source for all of your info, including live betting. They also have betting on esports and, of course, betting on the NBA playoffs. I'm getting up the odds right now. I don't know if they've adjusted it since Game 3 just ended for the Suns. Yeah, the odds are not available, but they do have NBA draft first round. I still feel like, I think I said this to you guys before, Paolo Banchero, it feels like there's some legit momentum that it could be him. He's plus 275. You don't see a lot of drafts where somebody falls that low when there's three guys who could all get it. I love betting on the number one overall pick, honestly, because it feels like there's always more momentum behind somebody than others, and they act like it's all just random and even. So head to the website today, betonline.net, or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action across sports and make smarter bets. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, we've covered a few things already. That's the nature of recaps, as you end up getting into adjustments, Aaron. But we'll do our best to see what can happen. So I want to focus a little bit on, I mentioned this going into Game 3 when I did my crossover with the Locked On Mavs guys, and I said one way I could see Game 3 feeling different is if both Finney Smith and Bullock make their shots. And that happened, at least from deep tonight. They both made four of at least 10 threes. They got a ton of them up. They each made four. And Kleba got it going a little bit more than he did in Game 2 for sure. And that was enough. They only shot 33% from deep. I thought they might have to shoot closer to like 45, 50% from deep to really take a game. That didn't happen. But what do you make of that? I think, again, to me, that's just another sign of Brunson and Doncic being able to drive and kick better than they had been.
Yeah, I actually told Gallagher 2 days ago, it was after Game 2, I told Jason Gallagher that we were probably going to lose Game 3. And I just had like,
I told my wife the same thing. Yeah,
yeah, like I didn't think Ayton was getting the touches that he needed to like in drives, like to whenever the Mavs went on a run, we just completely forget about Ayton sometimes. And I just think we need to get back to doing that. And even today, like, it just seemed like he never got in a rhythm. Like, Book usually gets into the rhythm in the first quarter, but so does Ayton. And we just haven't gotten him his touches since the first half of Game 1. So I just think, like, once we start getting him more involved, then everything will just run a lot smoother. And, yeah, with Dorian Finney-Smith and Bullock, like, they just were getting open shots. And Cleveland missed a couple of big ones. But at the end of the day, the score was still a 9-point game. I just think that what we did on offense really went over to what they did on offense. Like, we really screwed up to where their offense ran a lot smoother with just how terrible our shots were.
Yeah, and those guys weren't in foul trouble, which helped. On the Ayton side, I don't know. I would have to kind of go back and watch. It's always one of those things with Ayton where we can all kind of say, like, and I don't think you're doing this, but like a lot of fans, you know, in some game where even if it's a win, if he has a big first half and then a quiet second half, it's like, you know, like clockwork. You check Twitter, you check the Suns subreddit, and it's people, oh, they didn't feed him like they should. It's like, okay, they won the game. It doesn't matter. So I always want to like kind of go back and check before I say, you know, did they or didn't they? But he only took 12 shots. I think that says a lot in and of itself. He also got four offensive rebounds, which means put back shots on like two of those, that still gets him okay. Now he really only took 10 real shots. So not the type of diet you want from him. The other thing I'll say on that is I tweeted this out and I it was more of just like me venting a little bit. And then I got like way more engagement on the tweet from the Locked On Suns account than I expected of just saying that felt like a lot of JaVale McGee. And it didn't really look, if you look at the minutes, like, okay, not a terrible thing. You don't want to have to play Ayton a ton if you don't need to, but he wasn't in foul trouble at all. And especially in that third into the fourth quarter, I believe it was like the 8-minute mark in the fourth before Monty brought Ayton back in, and the Mavs were playing well and getting to the basket, getting shots. They got a three, wide open three for Kleba that you mentioned that McGee wasn't able to close out on. They got a drive from Kleba where McGee almost fell down. And it's like, you couldn't have got three more minutes for Ayton, put him at 36. Like, why did, I don't know. It's, again, it's nitpicking because it's a loss, whatever. I get you. It's only a single-digit loss, so I'm probably reading into some of this too much. But there's just those games where you feel like, man, I saw JaVale have to do way more stuff than he should have been asked to do. Why was that going on?
Yeah, and with the JaVale minutes, like, he's been doing okay, but I don't know how Monty decides when he's going to trust Biombo and when he's not. Like, I don't know how – does he flip a coin? Like, I just don't know when he decides when he wants Biombo to save him, because when he goes out there, dude plays hard. He stays in front of you.
Yeah.
And he gets rebounds. Like, I just don't know how he decides when he wants to play him or not.
Well, and what's crazy about it, too, is, like, you look at game two, and there's times where I get McGee's way taller – and, like, just jumping. Like, he's going to be able to get those lobs a little bit higher. He's going to stretch the defense out vertically a little bit more. He's going to contest shots with that much more height on it. I get all that stuff. I understand. He's probably, on the whole, a more valuable player. But, like, there's times when I watch, like, game, like I said, with game two, where it's like, hold on. So, Biombo got a big rim protection block. He finished like three times on the pick and roll. And we know he's a good rebounder. We know he plays with good energy. What is exactly the deal here? Like, and I don't really get it either, because the thing that I've been saying since the playoffs started is kind of preparing people, like, hey, there's going to come a time when JaVale starts getting DNPs, because every single time he's been in the playoffs, that has happened. I mean, the Warriors, the Lakers, he won titles. Last year with Denver, we didn't even see him in round two because he was already on the bench for them. So this happens. I don't get necessarily, you know, maybe it's not game three of round two when you pull the trigger on that, but you just see Kleba and it's like, it was obvious before game one tipped off that Biombo was going to be a better answer when Kleba was at the five. So did you have to lose a bunch of those minutes to figure that out? Like, I don't know. It was a mistake for sure to me.
Yeah, I hope he figures out what big he wants at some point. Like, we knew we needed the three bigs specifically for Milwaukee, we can say that. But he can figure out those early rotations now. Like, the Milwaukee thing will figure itself out if we get there. But right now, we might just need to go small more.
Yeah. Yeah, no Torrey Craig in this game, no Ish Wainwright, that weird Ish Wainwright appearance in game two. We didn't see any of that, so Monty seems to have just, okay, we're not dealing with any of the small ball big men right now. I think Biombo's going to end up being the answer. Like, we all thought it might be Torrey Craig at the trade deadline. We all got excited about Ish Wainwright in that Spurs game and whatever. It might just be that it's Biombo, and I would be fine with that. I think that he's earned that. He's played the best in that role, I feel like. Are there any other things you would change, whether it's rotation, whether it's getting, you know, better shots? I mean, I don't know. Like, the Suns shot 13 of 28 from deep. I think the turnovers and not playing dumb. I mean, that to me, like, that solves a lot of it. I mean, you want to do better defensively on Brunson and Luka, but, you know, I don't know if I trust Brunson to do that again. So I kind of lean toward what you're saying. That's so boring, though. Just don't be dumb, and then you'll win it in five games. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was just, I feel like we have to do better than that,
but it might be it.
Turnovers and just something from the bench. Just something. Yeah. Just something from it, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Game four is Sunday midday, so I'm sure you guys all know that because they went ahead and plopped that in the middle of Mother's Day. I'm glad I don't travel for these things, but it is not ideal. So although I know all of you guys are crazy who are listening to a Daily Suns podcast, so you will be tuned in. You will say, just mom, go sit in the corner. Or maybe you have a really cool mom and she'll watch the game with you. But either way, I will be here is my point. And we'll have another recap show. No show Saturday, or no show recorded on Saturday. No preview for game four. But keep it right here. Sunday afternoon, your recap will be here. And then we'll get ready for another week of shows. He is Aaron Edwards. He's a writer at All Caps NBA. Go support that show. That is on the Take Line YouTube channel. Hit that subscribe button, guys. Don't go anywhere. We will be back shortly. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on everything going on around the association this week.